Morning, my dear brothers and sisters and young people. Chris and I bring with us the loving greetings of your brothers and sisters at Southern Vales Ecclesia in Adelaide, Australia. I'll be quoting from the New American Standard Bible this morning, and you will notice that in chapter 12, verse 1, it substitutes for instruction the word discipline. It was Prophet Samuel who said that our God is a God of knowledge who weighs actions. Therefore, we will want to accept discipline so that our actions do not cause his condemnation. And what I'd like to do initially is a quick thematic overview of chapter 12, which was read this morning. This chapter has discipline as its underlying theme, and it fits well with the previous chapter, which describes how justice and balance enables the possessor thereof to be saved. Since discipline is inherent in the reward, chapter 11, verse 31, of the righteous, we must be prepared to accept the correction of aberrations in our walk. And perhaps that's too bland a word for some of our sins. Thus, chapter 12, verse 1, immediately follows the statement about being saved, as it says in the Septuagint. Discipline, or instruction from the AV, which refers primarily to verbal instruction and the knowledge of divine ideals, is an essential part of the wisdom which this book by Solomon, mostly, aims to teach those who respond to its words. Thus, the book opens to know wisdom and instruction in verse 2 of chapter 1. Perhaps we'll just go briefly there. Keep your finger in chapter 12. We'll be back there straight away. Chapter 1, verse 4. Proverb offers to the youth knowledge, and the NASB has naive. A naive person can go either way, good or bad, depending on how he's instructed or she. And this indicates how essential knowledge and instruction are by including both in the foundation principle of wisdom in verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. We recall how important this knowledge is, for in the age to come, the knowledge of the Lord will fill the earth as the waters cover the sea. If we expect to be rulers with Christ, then we know Christ would expect us to have the knowledge which is required to teach those people who may never have heard of Christ. Do we have that knowledge? Or are we like the people of Hebrews chapter 5, who didn't basically know the first principles? So in the chapter before us, that's chapter 12, a disciplined love of knowledge leads to life in which there is no death. That's wonderful. Acceptance of discipline leads to favor from the Lord, verse 2. Rejection thereof leads to condemnation, and that's the last thing we want. Those who respond will be established with roots so deep they cannot be moved, verse 3, and that's the picture of the tree there, which cannot be moved. Early instruction leads to the choice of a virtuous woman for a wife. And those sisters who can influence should do so, because the opposite is terrible. In turn, she enables him to develop those attributes of rulership, verse 4, so necessary for the life spoken of already. She helps to provide that crown which is a symbol of rulership. She so loved instruction for her role in married life that she has disciplined herself not to shame her husband. The thoughts of verse 5, the thoughts of the righteous are just, but the counsels of the wicked are deceitful. These thoughts result from a disciplined life which leads to justice, or that way which is right. This disciplined use of the mouth, verse 6, the second line, will deliver the upright at a time when the wicked are overthrown, verse 7. And that time is coming soon. The house of the righteous, if we go back to chapter 11, verse 29, he who troubles his own house will inherit wind, and the foolish will be servant of the wise-hearted. The house of the righteous, disciplined man, will stand the trials of life. A man who loves knowledge because he has been disciplined early will have the sort of insight, verse 8, which leads to praise now and in the future. Discipline causes a man to empty himself of pride. Verse 9a. Better is he who is lightly esteemed and as a servant than he who honors himself and lacks bread. And you may wonder why things have gotten so wrong in Christadelphia recently, in the last 3 decades. It's because of pride. And if you look in Proverbs, you will see that pride is at the top of God's hate list. So that should be the last thing in our character. The wise man's disciplined actions extend to compassion, verse 10, for the life of his beast, which is a touching contrast to the beastly person of verse 1b, who hates reproof. He who disciplines himself tills his land, verse 11, rather than pursuing vain things in the bright lights of a city, and will have plenty to eat, will not suffer from the evils of the good life. It requires discipline not to desire the booty of evil men, verse 12. And that's, I believe, quite an interesting translation, booty. But the tranquility of being satisfied with what God has given those who are righteous enables them to take deep root in a fruitful way of life. They will have a depth of character that will curtail the outbursts that ensnared those who are undisciplined, verse 13, by speaking before they think. Not only so, but he will be satisfied, verse 14, by the good fruit of his words, by those who return his good deeds to him. And I've seen much of that with the death of my brother. Wisdom means we will discipline ourselves sufficiently so that we will listen to counsel, verse 15. Sometimes youth don't want to listen. Sometimes old people don't want to listen. One way in which we can discipline our emotions is to conceal what otherwise would lead to dishonor, verse 16. Don't speak at once. Think about it. At such times, it requires discipline to speak the truth. Verse 17, because it is so easy for the flesh to bias our words. The tongue has the ability to cut or heal, verse 18. And you can imagine being punctured by a sword. Depending on the discipline of its owner, to enable us to discipline this member, we are given the knowledge that truthful lips will be established forever, verse 19. And the joy, verse 20, the last word, is a lot of those whose heart aims for peace in all that we counsel. Add to this the guarantee of freedom from harm, verse 21, and one can begin to see why we should discipline our lives, our lips, to deal faithfully, verse 22, the last line, with the facts. And that's all that God's interested in is facts. Of course, discipline means we must conceal, verse 23, certain types of knowledge. Just because we know something doesn't mean we have to blurt it out or say it. We can conceal it. If we accept and love discipline and love the knowledge of God, we will diligently set our hand to these things. The result will be that we will ultimately rule, verse 24, with those who have loved the same things. Anxiety, verse 25, I've got a problem with this one, I admit. In the heart, or depression as we term it, indicates a lack of discipline for those who are busy giving a good word to others to make their heart glad. Diligence, verse 27, which results from the love of discipline and knowledge, is a precious possession which leads to satisfaction and fulfilled plans. To sum up this theme, then, we can say that the disciplined way of life is a way of righteousness, which leads to a life where there is no death, verse 28. And isn't that what we're all looking for? So we can see how important it is to give and receive instruction and to dig for knowledge until it becomes pleasant, as it says in chapter 2, verse 10, which we won't turn to. So pleasant that we love it, verse 1. What things do we love? Our actions supply the answer, but it's not too late to change for the better. There are many allusions in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and 7, to chapter 12 of Proverbs, and that makes an interesting analysis for those people who would like to do that. We'll do a little bit this morning, but not much. Going back to verse 1 of chapter 12, whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but he who hates reproof is stupid. We need to put Proverbs 2 and 10 in our margin next to this verse. And we'll just read that now. For wisdom will enter your heart, and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. It takes a while when you're doing study before you start to enjoy it. Sometimes it's a chore, and we find it difficult. But after a while, it becomes, as it says there in verse 10, it will be pleasant. And after a diligent search, verses 2 to 4 of that chapter, make your ear attentive to wisdom, incline your heart to understanding. So listen, get your heart right. Pray, verse 3, for discernment, and diligent study, verse 4 and 5. You don't find silver and hidden treasures sitting on the surface of the earth. You've got to dig for them. And note, apply thine heart means we must be teachable. And this theme is found in Matthew 5 and verse 5. And we'll now have a bit of a look at the Sermon on the Mount. Because Jesus used the Proverbs as his source for so many of his parables. Matthew 5, verse 5. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. And a meek person is one who is teachable. Notice how the promise of meekness in the sermon alludes to the previous verse in Proverbs, that is to Proverbs 11, verse 31. A bit hard to pick that up now, but perhaps we can look at that later. So a person who loves instruction is meek or teachable. This is the opposite of pride. And if we wish to be in God's kingdom, we will love to learn of his ways. Going on then to verse 6 of Matthew 5, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. You remember Christ, that he searched not for natural food and drink, but for spiritual, for therein his life was manifested as the Son of God. Those who follow the Lord's instruction to ask, seek, and knock, and as stated in Matthew 7, will naturally seek knowledge from those who offer it. Some who offer it are false prophets, as we see in chapter 7, verse 15. Beware of false prophets, those who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. So they had false prophets in the Old Testament, and they had false prophets in the New Testament, and we've got false prophets today. I don't need to mention the male names, but they've been defeated in Revelation, which interpretation, decades ago. We have a new event in Adelaide of a sister calling herself a prophetess. And she says, her name's Janine Hennig, throw out the Bible. You don't need the Bible. You've got me. And that is how far the brotherhood has gone in these last days. So let us beware of false doctrine, false views of prophecy, and women's liberation. That's certainly not instruction. Going back to Proverbs chapter 12, verse 2, a good man is not born that way. He has listened to verbal discipline. He not only manifests goodness, as we see in Galatians 5 and 24, but there is no facade in his actions. He has crucified the flesh. There will be revealed many in the day of judgment who only had a show of goodness. Their actions were to obtain the praise of men, and so their reward is now. They were men of intrigue, always scheming. They're mentioned in the sermon in chapter 7, verse 21. Just quickly look at that. Matthew 7, verses 21 to 23. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, and in your name cast out demons, and in your name perform many miracles? Then Jesus will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. Here were false disciples, loud and repetitious. They kept track of all their good deeds, but this only brought their condemnation. So, brothers and sisters, let us examine our actions to make sure they are not a facade, a false front. If we go back to Proverbs 12, verse 7, we're reminded of the kernel which Christ turned into a parable. The wicked are overthrown and are no more, but the house of the righteous will stand. You recall that Jesus speaks about house either being built upon a rock or upon sand. The rock had a solid foundation, the sand had no foundation, Building on the rock was hard work. Building on the sand was easy. The rock was safe from the raging sea, and that's pretty important in these days of tsunamis, and so on. Going on then to verse 10 of Proverbs 12. A righteous man has regard to the life of his beast, but the compassion of the wicked is cruel. I was brought up on a farm, and perhaps some of you were as well, so it's very important to have compassion for the life of the beast, particularly if that was your means of transport and of plowing and so on. And this person's disciplined behavior causes him to extend mercy to God's lowliest creation. Going on to verse 20. Deceit is in the heart of those who devise evil, but counselors of peace have joy. So our plans shape us. Joy is not the expected alternative to deceit. But the proverb makes it clear that what we pursue for others and how we pursue it leaves its mark on our mind. And if we pursue happiness and joy for others, then that will be what we receive. If we counsel peace, we shall enjoy its byproduct ourselves. If, on the other hand, we imagine or devise, as the NESV says, evil, we will end up deceiving even ourselves. This thought expands into two of Christ's sayings. Firstly, by reversing the first half into a positive idea in Matthew 5, verse 8. Perhaps we'll just briefly look at that. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Isn't that a wonderful prospect? Seeing God, whom no man hath seen except Jesus. But God will come to the earth at the end of the millennium, and we will see God if we are pure in heart. If we have pure actions springing from pure heart, then we will see God. It's guaranteed there, and in Revelation, the details are more clear. What a wonderful prospect to look beyond the millennium, to the time when God shall be all and in all, and we shall see the Creator and be able to talk to him. Christ demonstrates that it's possible for others to think we have pure hearts when perhaps we don't. The second half of Proverbs 12, verse 20, just flipping back. Counselors of peace have joy. Finds expression in Matthew 5 and 9, which again we'll read. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. This is a peace at any price. This is not a peace at any price, but the peace which passes understanding when there is unity of mind brought about by its purity. There are those who love purity but will fight tooth and nail and refuse to find peaceful ways to bring about this purity. So there's no peacefulness in their life. Let us discipline ourselves to bring about peace in the practical way Christ defines in Matthew 5, verse 21 to 25. You've heard that the ancients were told, you shall not commit a murder, and whoever commits murder shall be liable to the court. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother, and that's not quite as bad as hate, shall be guilty before the court, and whoever shall say to his brother, Raca, which is Aramaic for empty head or good for nothing, shall be guilty before the Supreme Court, and whoever shall say you fool shall be guilty enough to go into the hell of fire. If therefore you are presenting your offering at the altar and you remember that your brother has something against you, leave your offering there before the altar and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother and then come and present your offering. Make friends quickly with your opponent at law while you are with him in the way, in order that your opponent may not deliver you to the judge and the judge to the officer and you be thrown into prison. We know that Christ's words may demand discipline, but the more we love the knowledge of his way, the more we will love discipline, for we will want it no other way. To sum up then, our walk in Christ must be a disciplined one, or else we will enter the broad path that leads to destruction, because that way requires no discipline. In Christ's life, there was severe discipline over his nature. His trial and crucifixion required supreme discipline, and we recall reading that this morning. As we partake of these emblems, we are reminded of his triumph over sin. Let us follow then his example, as stated in Hebrews 12, verse 2 to 7. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you may not grow weary and lose heart. You have not yet resisted to the point of shedding blood in your striving against sin, and you have forgotten the exhortation which is addressed to you as sons. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you are reproved by him. For those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines, and he scourges every son whom he received. It is for discipline that you endure. God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? Thank you.